Welcome, brave listeners, to Wilhelm Presents Frightening Tales. Please tune in to FrighteningTales.com for more scary stories. Today's tale is titled Buyer's Remorse, as written by Dan Coglanese. A good magician never reveals their secrets. But today, as I lie here in my deathbed, I am prepared to tell you mine. As a child, I took things more literally than most. My mother once asked me if the man in the moon stole a shoe I'd lost at a friend's house. I peered at the full moon that night, searching for this unknown man. Never found him. When I was 5 years old, I heard my uncle tell my mother that it was raining cats and dogs. I wanted a puppy so bad that I ran outside to catch one. I came back inside a few minutes later, soaked, confused, and disappointed. I never got to have a dog. On August 4th, 1987, taking things too literally steered me down a path from which there was no return. I was 8 years old, and this is the day I discovered my passion for magic. It was my best friend's 9th birthday party. Billy's parents hired a magician, Samuel the Anomalous. Weird name, right? But this guy was amazing. He was a tall, slender English gentleman, with a dazzling smile. His hands moved with effortless fluidity, making the crowd of 9-year-olds and their parents ooh and ah. He had a small stage made of 6 giant wooden squares, raised about a foot off the ground. A long, heavy white curtain supported by 2 trusses at the back of the stage gave the feel of a real performance, so he could emerge as if he were performing at the Riviera downtown Chicago. When I arrived at this party, it was a small cargo truck parked on the curb with a huge picture of Samuel the Anomalous on the side. He wore a tuxedo and a black cape with a magnificent smile, a black wand in one hand and the other extended in a exaggerated flourish as if to say, voila. I was mesmerized. As my mother and I sat in folding chairs in my friend's backyard, watching the magic show, I completely bought into the idea that this man was performing actual magic. Not tricks using sleight of hand or unseen devices. He read minds, guessed cards, and made a rabbit appear out of nowhere, levitated his wand in midair, and even sawed one of the moms in half and then put her back together. But with every trick, Billy yelled out, he's palming it with his left hand, or there's a false bottom, or it's dangling with fishing line. These reveals momentarily ruined my enjoyment. But Mom assured me this man was the real deal, and adults never lie. So I believed her. During the trick in which Samuel sawed Mrs. Geller's legs off and then put her back together, I whispered to myself, how did he do that? Billy's dad, sitting to my right, leaned over and whispered, A good magician never lets you see behind the curtain. After a while, Samuel the Anomalous grew annoyed with my friend's outbursts and called him on stage to assist him as a volunteer for his next trick. He brought out a huge black sheet and laid it on a stool next to him. Taking Billy's dad's comment literally, I inconspicuously moved to the end of the row, then around the side of the stage and out of sight behind a PG hydrangea bush in full bloom. I had a perfect view of the stage from the side. With a twinkle in his eye, Samuel promised to shock us all, Billy included. He raised the black curtain in front of Billy, making sure nobody in the audience could see him. He dramatically verbalized some foreign incantation, jostling the curtain to make it look like something was happening. All the while, I could see Billy just standing there, looking up at Samuel with a puzzled look. Then, in the span of just a few seconds, Billy transformed from a boy standing on his 2 feet to an animal on 4. Long ears grew atop his head and his hands contorted into hooves. His nose transformed to a long, hairy snout, and fur sprouted out all over his body. His legs bent into the hind legs of an equine. And oddly enough, the donkey was wearing Billy's orange and white striped polo shirt, a pair of jean shorts, and even his white gym shoes. Only now, he stood on 4 legs. Samuel dropped the curtain with a theatrical sweep of his arm. The crowd gasped in awe, and Billy the donkey looked around, clearly confused. He brayed, causing those in the audience to erupt in laughter. Adults stood there with their mouths hanging open, and the kids cheered and clapped. One father barked, "It's wearing the kid's clothes! How did he do that?" I stared in dawning horror. The other tricks were fun and harmless. This one was terrifying, as I immediately wondered what it would be like if he turned me into a donkey. Billy became restless, kicking his hind legs while crying out in weak little squeals. Some of the kids in the front row yelled in panic and grabbed their parents, while Samuel got Billy under control. He uttered something quietly, and Billy stilled. With another charming grin, Samuel held up his hand and said, "Sorry, folks, no need to be alarmed. Little Billy wants to be a boy again, and he shall have his wish." Raising the black sheet again, Billy the donkey was hidden from the audience. Again, Samuel shook the sheet and chanted in a foreign tongue, a chilling incantation. And just as before, I watched the donkey transform back into a little boy I knew as Billy. The look of sheer terror and confusion on Billy's face gave me chills as I peered back up at Samuel. Samuel grinned down at him and winked. As he dropped the black sheet, Samuel raised his hands in the air in triumph. The audience erupted in applause. Samuel took a bow, pointed at Billy, and yelled, "How about a hand for our brave volunteer?" They cheered louder, and Billy wobbled back to his seat. After Samuel's show ended, I emerged from behind the bush, shaken but curious. As he packed up his tools, I approached the stage. He glanced up at me as he packed a box with his wand and deck cards and handcuffs. "Tell me, young man, did you enjoy the show?" I nodded slowly and asked, "How did you turn Billy into a donkey?" Without looking up, Samuel grinned. His teeth appeared pointed like fangs in his eyes. Even though he didn't look directly at me, his eyes flashed a haunting confidence bordering on arrogance, laced with hunger. Finally, he looked up at me and said, "It's magic, dear boy. I eyed him closely, wanting to delve deeper. Was he really a donkey? He leaned towards me and whispered, "What do you think?" My mouth hung open and I couldn't speak. I could see in his eyes he already knew what I thought. I knew what I saw, but my initial horror was replaced with a thirst. I was hooked. I wanted that power. Samil read me like an open book. I asked, "Could I do magic like that?" He stood upright and watched me for a moment, and then smiled. Without a word, he turned around and rifled through a box, then brought out a large, old-looking leather-bound book. The cover was thick and soft like flesh, intricate patterns sewn with a luxurious black thread adorned the cover, and black letters stitched with the same black thread formed three words in Latin: Ars obscura intus. I would find out years later it meant within lie the dark arts. Samil sat on the edge of the stage, motioning for me to join him. All this time, the other kids ran around the backyard with cupcakes and fruit punch, too hopped up on sugar to sit still. The parents, including my mother, gathered inside for an adult drink. In the presence of this majestic book, though we were alone, he ran his fingers across the cover and I could have sworn it shimmered. More magic? In this book are all my tricks, illusions, and games. Every bit of debauchery a boy could desire. I asked in the quietest voice imaginable, "All of your magic tricks are written in there?" He nodded and whispered, "And they're all real, as long as you truly believe." "Do you believe?" As if in a dream, I nodded slowly and said, "I do." I sat there for some time as my mind danced with the possibilities. All the tricks I saw that day, and all the tricks I didn't see. My mind veered away from the scary one in which Billy turned into a donkey, and I daydreamed about flying, lifting heavy objects as if they were as light as a feather, and reading minds. That was my favorite. Some minutes later, a burly guy in denim overalls tapped my shoulder and said, "You gotta move, kid." I shook my head to clear it and stood up. All that was left of Samil's portable magic theater was a few pieces of the stage. Off to the side, nearest the house, was a stool. The stool Samil used on stage. On it was the book, Ars Obscura Intus. I was drawn to the book, like a moth to a flame. I hungered for what was inside. Grabbing it and holding it tightly to my chest, I retreated to the corner of the yard next to the bush I hid in while watching Billy turn into a donkey. What began as an escape from reality slowly became my prison. Cargo truck pulled away from the curb and I felt the ownership of this magnificent book transfer from that charming man in the black cape to me. My childhood died that afternoon, replaced by a coldness that had no home. It was only renting me. That night, I spent hours reading by flashlight under my covers. I read of fun little tricks, like guessing a card someone picked from a full deck, to making a coin disappear in thin air, all the way to some darker ones, like making an enemy's nose bleed uncontrollably by recanting a simple spell over a sample of the person's hair steeped in venison blood. That one made me shudder. There were countless more, but I was too scared to go any further. For the next few months, I learned the fun tricks and became an expert at illusions. The details explained what to do with my hands and all of the objects involved, plus the incantations to recite while I did them. They were all in another language that I did not bother to learn. To my dismay, I found one ubiquitous phrase at the end of every single incantation. Hac voto dono tibi animam meme. I figured it meant something like voila or abracadabra. It did not. By high school, I had shot up 6 inches and seemed to be much older than my fellow 13-year-old freshmen. I spent my afternoons learning new tricks. The incantations became more elaborate with the seemingly more powerful illusions. I graduated from guessing the number a person was thinking of to the contents of their wallets. From levitating a magic wand to levitating actual people. From making a coin disappear in my hand to making people disappear and reappear. One time, at a college talent show, I made it rain inside. Everyone assumed I had made some agreement with the janitorial staff in the cafeteria to gain access to the fire sprinklers, but they had no idea how I did it. I made it pour on only the second row, a thin bar of precipitation that followed the 10 audience members when they jumped up to get out of the unseen cloud. And yes, one time, I even tried the old turn Billy into a donkey trick with a girl I dated when I was 20. But I turned her into a toad. Oh, how I howled with laughter as she hopped around madly trying to get my attention. We were outside at a park with her friends one hot summer night. They searched everywhere for her, demanding to know where she went. When we were alone, I turned her back. It was a mean trick, I know, but she said kissing me was like kissing a frog. And the power I felt when I brought her back and she cowered like a dog, it was intoxicating. I first noticed something was amiss. When I turned 25, I had developed a pretty severe arthritis in both wrists. The discomfort spread up my arms to my shoulders, my hair grayed, and stopped growing altogether by the time I was 30. With each more powerful trick, I felt a physical draining of my strength and stamina. I became known as Spellbinder Extraordinaire Jonathan Magnifico by my early 30s. Perhaps you've heard of me. I'm the guy who summoned a tornado inside the metro in Chicago. To this day, nobody has any clue how I did it. The newspapers interviewed experts who speculated, but none of them came up with the simple answer. Magic. No trickery or illusions, real, actual magic. Oh, they interviewed me and demanded to know how I could come up with such an elaborate and believable illusion. I just shrugged and said, "A magician never reveals his secrets." Five years ago, I turned 40. When I looked in the mirror, I saw a man who appeared on the verge of 100. 100 years old, that is. Yes, you heard that right. 100 years old. My body was frail and gaunt, my face haggard, my skin translucent, with thick blue veins and sallow tendons clinging to weakened muscles. I walk hunched over now with a cane. That is, when I can walk. I have no family to speak of. My children are the tricks, the illusions. I gave birth to countless tragedies and horrors. My only spawn on which my name will be my legacy. The reason I tell you this now is because last week I saw some eel again. 37 years after Billy's 9th birthday party. I was signing books at a local bookstore called Hilda's Rare Books of the Occult near my hometown. It wasn't a book I had written, but a book about 21st century magicians. The new magician. There was a chapter on me, and the publisher got the idea that fans would want to meet me and get my autograph. They were right. About a dozen fans showed up. And then there was Samuel. Oh, he waited patiently in line with a copy of the book. I was feeling particularly ill that day. A dull ache in my side had grown into a ball of fire, roaring with every step I took. I did not dare to get it diagnosed. I already knew what it was. Cancer. Oh, what, I have no idea. But whatever it was, it's beyond the point of treatment. All these years, a sense of the growing debt of my account haunted me. Of each new trick, I felt more drunk with power and closer to deadly intoxication. And now, the balance was due. He introduced himself, but I told him I recognized him. He seemed delighted by this, responding with a charming grin and a chuckle. I met him over 30 years ago, and I swear to a god I no longer believe in, he had not aged a single day. How can a man not age at all over 30 plus years? Probably the same way another man can age a decade in a single year. He held out his copy of The New Magician and whispered, "Could you make it out to Samuel, please?" As I scribbled my name on the inside cover, I felt him looming over me. After I handed him his book, he stretched his other hand towards me. I glanced at it, then back up at his face. He waited patiently, and then I understood. I didn't know why I brought the book with me that day. I hadn't touched it in months, but that day, Ars Obscurus Intuus was with me. It was that morning that I finally had the audacity and courage to look up those 6 words. Hac voto dono tibi, animam mim. At the end of every single incantation I had spoken over the decades, to find out what they meant. Well, they're Latin, and they mean, "With this wish, I gift thee my soul." I handed the book over to him, a leather-bound book with the darkest words I've ever read in my life, and I believed in those words because he told me to. I believe they would fuel my magical power, and they did, because adults never lie, do they? A week ago, handing him that book was me writing the check on the debt I owed. And now, I just wait. For every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Is the intoxicating power that came with such dark sorcery worth it? In a man's final moments, he'd give anything for another year, another week, or even another day. I believe I will have more days, but not here. My soul has been imprisoned within a book that has captured 1,000 hungry souls. And soon, I will join them.
Thank you, brave listeners, for making it this far through another frightening tale. You've been listening to Buyer's Remorse by Dan Coglanese. Thank you, Dan, for your story this week. I've nearly filled all 26 spots for season 3, but if you have a scary story, do submit it at frighteningtales.com. And please tune in again next Friday for another frightening tale. That is, if you're brave enough.